Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Had to let the music bed breathe a little bit because I had to grab the one remote and turn on TNT because Steven quoted my tweet and said, as long as the Celtics keep beating the Cavs, we should have some fun. This game's a 5-point game with 4:47 to go on the very green court in Boston. Steven, are you a Celtics fan?
I sure am, yeah. My dad grew up in New England, so he kind of indoctrinated me and all my siblings. People get pretty surprised. I am, you know, Celtics, Patriots, Red Sox, all that stuff. Didn't quite get into hockey, but I'll root for the Bruins when they're in the playoffs.
What do you make of this court?
Hate it. hate the jerseys that they came up with, too. I mean, like, the parquet is classic in Boston,
yep.
So I don't know why they need to screw this up with a bunch of green stuff.
Well, let's get into some pit as Derek White drains a three from the top of the key. All right, so Pitt football, 7-3 now, and the Clemson game, a sour taste in the mouths of Pitt fans, I would say. As they kind of turn the page here and flip the script to Louisville and Boston College to close out the year, you know, what can Pitt kind of do to, you know, end this season on a high note and kind of get to, you know, they're obviously bowl bound and the quality of the bowl game might have dipped a little bit, but you know, based off of the last 3 weeks, what do you think Pitt has to kind of do to, you know, try and right the ship? Because it doesn't get easy. There's two road games against two pretty good teams to end the year.
Right. If there's anything positive to take away from that Clemson game, it's that, you know, you're down, what, two or three starting offensive linemen, multiple starting offensive linemen. You eventually lost Lyndon Cooper in the fourth quarter. You had a backup quarterback in Nate Yarnell in there, and you committed 13 penalties and only lost on a 50-yard touchdown run inside of 2 minutes. You need a chance to maybe win the game on your last possession. So if I'm Pitt and I'm thinking about what do I need to do to finish the year strong, it's not beat myself. Part of that is because, you know, part of the way that they lost that game is tied to the personnel changes that they've had and the injuries that they've suffered. But, you know, you eliminate, you know, maybe even only one or two of those procedural penalties that they got down on the goal line. You know, on 3rd and 1, Desmond Reed tries to leap in for a touchdown. He's just a little bit short. Pitt ends up kicking a field goal there, but that was late in the fourth quarter. You know, that's 3 points instead of 7 in a game that you lose by 4. So they had every opportunity to win that game and kind of gave it away themselves, gave away a top 25 upset. So it cuts both ways. You fumbled an opportunity for a big win, but at the same time, you were right there with a team that's been the class of the ACC and might be back in the outskirts of an at-large playoff conversation, maybe still has a chance to make the ACC championship game. So I still think that's plenty encouraging. And I know some fans might have readjusted their expectations after Pitt won 7 in a row to start the season, but they still only won 3 games last year, right? Like, this is an improvement. And you think about all the guys that are eligible to return next year. There's a lot to look forward to, and a lot of the season – a successful, strong finish to the year is still in Pitt's hands, in my opinion.
Nate Yornell obviously had a pretty decent day, 350 yards through the air. Is Eli Holstein in a spot to come back this week? What's the latest there?
Yeah, it sounds like he's improving. It's still kind of a known. He's not been cleared just yet, but it sounds like things are getting better. I mean, seems a little bit more of an open question now after Nate did play so well against Clemson that, I assume Eli would be the starter if he is cleared. But, again, Pitt will have confidence either way if Nate Yornell is the guy to go. Head injuries can be kind of weird, which is what we assume Eli Holstein has had. It's not necessarily something that the Pitt program will state to you, but, we saw him take a hit to the head and then leave the game against Virginia, so you can kind of do the math there. But this is also the second time that Holstein has had to leave the game early because of a hit to the head. It happened against Syracuse as well. He's eventually able to return, but when those things start to add up, the recovery process can be a little bit more difficult. But, Holstein did dress last week against Virginia or against Clemson. He was said to be a game-time decision. So I think the assumption there is that, if he was able to dress, if he, came right up to game time before he was officially ruled out, then, that's an encouraging sign with another week of rest and an opportunity to practice during the week.
Stephen Thompson on the Fan Hotline with us. He covers Pitt Athletics for the Post-Gazette. Stephen, the rush offense for Pitt, 33 carries for 88 yards. It's kind of dipped in the last couple of weeks. What's attributed to that? And, how can maybe the run offense get back to, what we saw earlier in the year with Desmond Reed being one of the more dynamic players, not just on Pitt, but in college football?
Yeah, I mean, some of this is a little bit natural, the way that they're limited on the offensive line. I mean, there's only so much you can expect against a team like Clemson with that kind of defensive front for, a bunch of backups being mixed in and a backup quarterback that maybe, I don't know how much Clemson respected the pass in that game, even though Yornell ended up having a good game. So I think part of this is you just need the offensive line to gel a little bit. You need some of these guys who haven't had a ton of starts and maybe don't have a ton of experience, especially with one another, to gel a little bit. You hope another week of practice together, some more game experience will help with that. But you also need a quarterback who can, give you a number in the run game like Holstein did earlier in the year. That certainly helped as well. And he has maybe the bigger arm, the better deep ball potential as opposed to Nate Yornell. So, if Eli Holstein's able to go this week, I think he would add a level of playmaking and, again, adding a number in the run game that's been really helpful for Pitt at a lot of times this year. So, those are a couple ways they can do it. But at a certain point, you just need to kind of get healthy again. You need this offense to be whole before you start to talk about, what it can be at its best.
As we flip the script here, we'll get into the basketball team in a moment. But Pitt, a road matchup, actually two road matchups to close out the year. The first one on Saturday at 4 o'clock at Louisville, and Louisville's got a seasoned quarterback in Tyler Shuck. What other challenges do the Cardinals present? What does Pitt have to do to kind of get back into the swing of things, get back into the win column for the first time in almost a month?
Well, they've got some really talented receivers as well. Brooks is one of those guys, and then the other name escapes me, but they're really explosive in the pass game. So they've got two talented receivers there that can really light up. Chris Bell is the other guy, the other receiver that you need to look out for. Just found his name. You also got to keep an eye on Isaac Brown, who entered this week questionable, according to Jeff Brohm. He's probably the favorite to win ACC Rookie of the Year. So he's a big name that you got to watch as well, really explosive as well. I mean, this Louisville team loves the big plays. So Brown, Brooks, and Bell are the ones that you, the killer bees, I guess, that you got to look out for on offense. And on defense, the defensive end, Gillette, is another big-time playmaker, a lot of sacks, a lot of tackles for loss. That's a name that you want to watch on the defensive side of the ball. And with Pitt kind of having the turnover and the shuffling that it's had on the offensive line, he could be in line for a big day. And whoever's at quarterback is going to have to know where he is on every play. And Gabe Bell's also going to have to know where he is on every play to try and send some help, some tight end chips, some running back help maybe in pass protection when Gillette's on the field.
All right, let's flip the script now. Stephen Thompson with us of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Covers Pitt Athletics. We'll talk a little bit more about a positive and the Pitt basketball team. A dominating win last night over VMI, 93-48, a bunch of guys in double figures. They look good, and I know, you know, it's some people might roll their eyes and say that, you know, with a win against a team like VMI, but Pitt now up to 16th in KenPom, and it gets tougher as the schedule moves along here with LSU and the Greenbrier tip-off coming up this weekend. Just talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you saw last night, what you liked, and how maybe Pitt stacks up against a team like LSU or UCF or Wisconsin, whoever they see in the Greenbrier.
Yeah, so I see a Pitt team that has really locked in on the defensive end. You know, when you look at the way that Jeff Capel's teams have improved from, quite frankly, a miserable start through those first 4 years where they didn't win many games and weren't particularly competitive in many of them either. You look at the offense and how they've been able to shoot the ball so much better over the past, going into this year, before this year, 2 years. And that's kind of led to the back-to-back 21 seasons. But this year they have added, some length and some veteran leadership that I think has really made their defense a lot better. But, you know, similar to those last two teams that did win 20 or more games and one that went to the NCAA tournament, this is a Pitt team that's built around its guards. They don't turn the ball over. They're pretty efficient offensively, even if they don't play at a particularly fast pace. And I think they're multiple as well. So while they're built around their guards, you've got a guy like Cam Corn who's given you, you know, double-figure scoring in just about every game this year. I think every game this year. But then, you know, Guillermo Diaz-Graham has been a nice scoring punch and diversified his game a little bit. You got Amza Lalala coming off the bench, who's, adds a little bit of scoring as well. Brandon Cummings, as a freshman, has added some stuff defensively and energy-wise that's been great. Zach Austin has been better shooting the ball this year. So there have been some improvements from the returners, but you've still got a team that's built around three veteran guards that – our offensive engines that take pride on defense can play both ways. So it's a Pitt team that I think is leaning on his experience as well. It's when you look at it, one of the more experienced teams in all of Division I, and looking at KenPom right now, so they're top 30 in average Division I experience, which I think is huge, and that contributes to some of the stuff like the way that they are able to prevent turnovers on offense, create turnovers on defense, take the right shots, and play efficient offense in the way that Jeff Capel really wants them to.
So they're 5-0, getting some votes in both the coaches' poll and in the latest AP poll, but those wins against, you know, Radford, Murray State, Gardner-Webb, West Virginia, and then VMI. That first five games to the next five games, very different because you've got LSU, either UCF or Wisconsin, then at Ohio State, at Mississippi State, and then a conference matchup with Virginia Tech. So it's five straight from here against Power Five opponents. The question I ask is how much more are we going to find out about this Pitt basketball team in the next five games?
Well, a whole heck of a lot. LSU and Virginia Tech, I think those are teams that Pitt should beat. Kind of depends on who they draw in the Greenbrier tournament between Wisconsin or UCF. Wisconsin seems like a pretty good team, even though they struggled against, I believe it was Texas Rio Grande Valley last night, just had to squeak out a win, but they had a huge win against Arizona last week. So you're going to learn a lot about Pitt, especially because Ohio State and Mississippi State seem like they're teams that are kind of on the fringes of the top 25. Wisconsin is firmly in there. But, you know, Pitt's going to be able to, finally get tested by a team that has comparable size and talent. I think West Virginia had some talent, but the size disadvantage, I think, was just way too much for them to overcome. And that's not really going to be the case over these next five games. You're going to face some real live Division I athletes and some real live Division I size. So I don't expect Pitt to go undefeated during the stretch. If they do, then we can start dreaming a lot bigger. But how they perform against, Ohio State and Mississippi State, and then Wisconsin, if they're able to draw them, I think that's going to tell you how high their ceiling is. Like I said, LSU and Virginia Tech probably should be wins. I think the same thing about UCF if they're able to get them. But that trio, Ohio State, Mississippi State, Wisconsin, you know, they go 2-1 in that stretch, or, you know, much less 3-0. And this Pitt team could maybe, you know, win something really serious and compete in the ACC and make a run in the tournament. I think also the other thing is Jeff Capel deserves some credit for recognizing how his non-conference schedule was used against the Panthers last year in NCAA tournament conversations, and he made sure that they're not, that's not going to happen again. He got them into a multi-team event that will have some really quality teams, but also set up that Ohio State game, which will be really big on the road, a quad one opportunity, and look at that ACC-SEC challenge game on the road against Mississippi State. It's going to be tough, but if Pitt can keep their head above water, have a winning record, or maybe even go 4-1, we can start thinking about this Pitt team as a really good team.
He is Stephen Thompson. Check him out covering Pitt in the Post-Gazette. Stephen, what does your weekend look like? Are you hitting Greenbrier, then Louisville, or what's the plan?
No, so luckily I have a very good beat partner, Chris Carter, who's going to be down at the Greenbrier this weekend. I'll be following along on TV, having a little bit of analysis for you in the Post-Gazette. While I'm in Louisville, I'll be doing that on Friday night. Then I'll have Louisville Pitt football on Saturday. And then I hop a 6 a.m. flight back to Pittsburgh so that I can be seated for either a 2:30 or 5 o'clock tip off between either Pitt or UCF on Sunday in the end of the Greenbrier tournament. And I'll be doing kind of a similar thing, following along remotely, but having some analysis for you from that game as well.
Well, you guys do a fantastic job. Keep it up. Thanks for joining me again. We'll do it again soon. Steven, have a great night. And I think your Celtics might pull one out here. So enjoy the rest of the evening, man.
Thanks a lot, Jack.
You got it. There he goes. Steven Thompson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. What a weekend. 6 a.m. flight back to Pittsburgh, and then maybe a drive down to White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. The UCF matchup would be intriguing. We can talk a little bit about that next, because Dior Johnson, remember him? He plays for UCF now. So that would be an interesting matchup if UCF were to beat Wisconsin, or if Pitt were to fall to LSU and UCF were to lose. Regardless, there's a chance that Pitt might be going up against a former player in Dior Johnson, who didn't play but was a highly touted recruit that Jeff Capel was able to bring to Pittsburgh. All right, 412-928-9370. That is the number. It's also the number of the Fan Text Line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Your phone calls, all that stuff coming up next. We'll talk more Pitt. We'll talk more Steelers throughout the rest of the show. We're on until 10:35 tonight. I'm Jack Hillgrove. It's the Fan Evening Show at Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
So tomorrow you can join the Joe Show Joe Starkey at JP Roofing and Siding, Route 30 in Irwin. That's tomorrow, Wednesday, November the 20th, for a live broadcast, 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Joe will be kicking off our Fan for the Win campaign to benefit the Women's Center and Shelter of Greater Pittsburgh. Drop off a gift card from a retail location or grocery store that can go to a family who's been displaced due to domestic abuse. Anyone can make a donation, and they'll get pizza and a beverage courtesy of Bishop's Pizza in North Versailles and JP Roofing. Again, that's tomorrow at JP Roofing and Siding, Route 30 in Irwin, until 10 to 2 for the Joe Starkey Show. Have you ever met JP, Joel? I have not, and I've heard quite often on Joe's show about how marvelous his mustache is.
I have not, but it would be pretty cool to have as increnculent of a mustache as he has.
Andrew and Chris were talking about this, too. Do you think the Skeens mustache returns next year? Because he's rocking a beard right now.
I think it's just some sort of off-season beard, if I had to guess, and we'll see Paul Skeens' mustache and everything on opening day.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be the slam dunk opening day starter, right?
I guess, I mean, unless it's like Mitch Keller based on a seniority thing, but I highly doubt that. That would be disrespectful to Paul Skeens, probably.
No, I think in the way that the schedule shakes out with the Pirates, they open up in Miami again for four games. So that'll probably be Skeens. And then you've got one day rest, two, three, the Rays on the 31st. And then the first and the second. So I think you could be in a situation potentially for Mitch Keller to start the home opener against the Yankees. But how many days rest would that be? Skeens starts here. He would rest the 28th, the 29th, 30th, the 31st. Start the first, the middle game in Tampa. Yeah, if your rotation starts Skeens, Jones, Keller, it would go Skeens in game one, Jones in game two, Keller game three, probably Falter game four, and then fifth starter, Johan Oviedo, game five against the series opener against the Rays. And then Skeens would start the middle game against Tampa. Jones would start game two, or the finale, and then you'd be off. And then Friday, April 4th, is the home opener against the Yankees. And you'd probably have Mitch Keller. But wouldn't that be something if, for however it shakes out, if the home opener is Paul Skeens against Gerrit Cole? If Gerrit Cole ends up going back to the Yankees,
that would be quite something, wouldn't it?
That would be increnculent, Jolie, some might say. I have not been to a Pirates home opener as a fan. I covered it a couple of years ago for Kutch's return to Pittsburgh. And then last year, something happened at the station. We were busy with other stuff. We didn't get to it. But I might be... Might have to take a personal day, get out and enjoy it. I have not, again, been to a Pirates home opener as a fan. 412-928-9370 is the number if you're up and you want to join the conversation. We're talking about anything. We were talking Steelers early on in the show. We can revisit the Steelers and the Browns on Thursday. I think the Steelers need to win this game on Thursday against the Browns by at least two possessions or more. And I'm going to acknowledge my dear friend, Kyle Dawson, voice of the Washington Wild Things. Shout out to Kyle. He quote tweeted my original tweet for the show tonight and called me a psycho. Thursday night, bad weather against the division opponent. A win is a win. Bad weather to me shouldn't necessarily matter in a game like this. Why, might you ask? Well, the Steelers have a pretty darn good run offense this year. Not so much in the last couple of weeks, but if you look at the totality of what the Steelers have done with the run offense compared to some other teams across the league, it's pretty darn good. Eighth in the NFL in yards per game. Only Philadelphia, Baltimore, Detroit, Green Bay, Arizona, Wisconsin, San Fran are better. And Washington. Did I say Wisconsin? I meant to say Washington. I obviously said Wisconsin. But the Steelers have the eighth best rush offense in football this year. The Browns run defense near the bottom of the league. And the Browns are coming off of a game in which they lost to New Orleans by three scores and gave up 200-plus rushing yards. And I get it. That's a game in a dome versus a game outside. But if the weather really does suck, it should gear the Steelers to run the ball more. You've got Jaylen Warren. You've got Najee Harris. You've got a guy named Justin Fields if you sprinkle him into the equation enough. And I say Justin Fields because Taysom Hill had seven carries for 138 yards and three touchdowns against those Browns on Sunday. And on a short week with a banged-up Browns defense and Myles Garrett questionable, the Steelers should run for 200 yards on Sunday. If the Saints can do it, the Steelers can do it. Alvin Kamara is a good running back, but he only had 16 carries for 67 yards. And Taysom Hill, 138's a lot, but you mean to tell me that, you know, if Najee Harris has a better game than Alvin Kamara did, 16 for 67, which I think Najee can. He's gone over 100 a couple of times this year. The other 100-plus yards, Jaylen Warren and maybe Cordarrelle Patterson and Justin Fields can't get. I'd like to think they can. And another person texted about a couple of hours ago, Chiefs-Broncos results. Did that make you think less of the Chiefs? No, they won, and that's all that matters. Sure, for the two-time defending Super Bowl champions with the best quarterback in football and maybe the best quarterback of all time when it's all said and done for Mr. Mahomes, yeah, that's fine for the Chiefs to win that game 16-14 because the Chiefs have the resume. The Chiefs have the pedigree. The Chiefs have been there, done that. The Steelers aren't lately. The Steelers haven't won a playoff game in 8 years. So they've got a little bit more to prove to me. Yeah, you know what? Just because it's an AFC North opponent on the road on a short week, it doesn't matter to me. I need to see the Steelers win by at least two possessions and have the game really never in doubt because the Browns are a bad football team and bad football teams should lose to good football teams by a sizable margin. And if the Steelers are who we hope them to be, I saw one of the NFL power rankings today, I think it was on Fox, had Lions 1, Steelers 2. I don't know that I'd go that far yet, but if the Steelers really... If you want to believe that the Steelers actually can play the Detroit Lions or the Eagles or whoever the hell in the Super Bowl, they've got to show you a thing or two. And to me, a thing or two is beating a bad 2-8 Browns team by at least two possessions on Thursday. The Steelers don't have the resume that the Chiefs do for me to say, oh, you know what, they only beat the Broncos by 2 points. They'll be all right. It's a divisional opponent. As a matter of fact, if it were the Broncos, and to take it a step further, if the Broncos were in the AFC North, and this was a game that the Steelers were playing on the road against a divisional Denver opponent, I'd say, yeah, you know what, a win's a win. Because Denver has got a pretty darn good rookie quarterback, a good head coach, and some young talent on both sides of the ball that I think Broncos fans should be excited about. Same goes for the Bengals. 4-7. Not a good record, but a great roster. So if this was a game that the Steelers were playing in Cincy on Thursday, then absolutely a win is a win. Against Joe Burrow in enemy territory. Against Ja'Marr Chase in enemy territory. And as a matter of fact, Pony said earlier today that he wouldn't be mad if the Steelers lost on Thursday on a short week to the Browns, If it were the Bengals, I would take that approach. But it's not. It's the 2-8 Browns playing with a backup quarterback, Jameis Winston, and a depleted defense that's only going to have like 3 or 4 healthy corners, and the best player on that defense might not play. And that linebacking core, without Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who's on IR, stinks. So yeah, you know what? Screw the short week, screw the bad weather, and screw the fact that it's an AFC North opponent. Win the game by at least 2 possessions and not leave it in doubt. That's the approach I take on Thursday night. And if they ended up winning a close ball game, similar to the Ravens game, I have more concerns than I would hopes. I would feel a lot better if this team won this game 16-6 and was 9-2 than if they won it 16-13. Especially with Cincinnati coming up. And especially with the horribly brutal stretch with Philly, Baltimore, and Kansas City all in 10 days in December. If you've got a Steelers take, if you agree or disagree with everything I just said, let me know at 412-928-9370. We'll have a conversation until 10:35 tonight. The Nightly Sports Call with Pomp and Pony gets underway at 10:35, but we're talking sports until then, so get on the horn. Shoot us a text on the fan text line or hit me up on Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. It's the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jack Hillgrove at Sports Radio 93.7. The Fan. Oh, boy. Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan. I'm Jack Hillgrove. I'm with you for about another 45 minutes. Give or take. 10:35, the Nightly Sports Call with Pomp and Pony on KDK Plus and 93.7 The Fan. But we're taking you up until then. The Penguins lose in overtime. 3-2 to the Tampa Bay Lightning. 2-0 was the lead going into the third period. And naturally, like the Penguins have done from time to time this year, they blow it. Braden Point scores about 6 minutes into the third period, or close to it, to make it 2-1. Tampa ties it. 12:49 into the third period at 2. Game goes to overtime. Point, the game winner in overtime as well. He scored just about a minute left in the overtime period. Tristan Jarry getting the start in net tonight. Pretty darn good for 2.5 periods of play. Puljujärvi, Raquel, the goals in periods 1 and period 2 for the Penguins. So the Pens are now 7-10-4. If you like to combine it like I do, because the last column is overtime losses, the Penguins are 7-14. They have won 7 games. They have lost 14. They stink right now. And if you're on your way home from the game and you want to vent, feel free to pick up that phone. Do it safely, hands-free if you're in the car, at 412-928-9370. We can get some frustration out on the Penguins if you were at the game tonight to see Jake Guentzel return to Pittsburgh. He didn't do a whole lot. 2 shots, no points, but his team obviously picking up the win 3-2 over the Penguins. Again, the number 412-928-9370. We're also talking Steelers and Browns, and that is where we go to KP, who's now on the Fan Hotline. What's up, KP?
Hey, man, how you doing? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. What's up?
Hey, man, I just wanted to kind of add my 2 cents and kind of agree with you. I feel like on Thursday night, our margin of victory has to be at least by 17 points or more. I mean, Cleveland was already bad enough with Deshaun Watson and all their starters in there. Now that they're, like, severely undermanned, and, of course, goofy Myles Garrett is running his mouth like always.
Yeah.
It's just time to go out there and win 37-10. I mean, Cleveland doesn't even belong on the same field as us Thursday night. I'm not even sure how they even got a Thursday night primetime game this season. But if Russell Wilson is really who he thinks he is, he needs to go ahead and show us. Because right now, I'm kind of losing faith on him. You know, I'm already in the camp of going back to Justin Fields. let me explain to you why. Even though the offensive line didn't really block that well against Baltimore, Wilson was holding on to the ball too long. And that's where the mobility and the age factor comes in. On half of those plays, if that was Justin Fields, when that pocket was breaking down, he would have took off. Not only that, but Russell Wilson's 5'11", Justin Fields is 6'2". When a play breaks down like that, you want a quarterback who is tall, agile, mobile, who's able to extend plays and see down the field when receivers are breaking.
I get that, KP, but you have to also kind of look at it black and white. Like, they're 4-0 with Russ, and the offense has scored 7 more points a game with Russ at the helm versus when Justin Fields was there. You know, I think there's room for Justin Fields in the offense. Sure, I spent a segment earlier on in the show talking about how I wouldn't hate every red zone opportunity that the Steelers have with Justin Fields under center. But Russell Wilson is giving them more opportunities to get to the red zone than Justin Fields did. Russell Wilson already has 11 drives inside an opponent's 10-yard line in 4 games. It took Justin Fields 6 to get to 11. So the offense is better with Russell Wilson. It's just a matter of executing in the red zone. And I do agree with you. He is holding on the ball for a little bit too long. But I still don't think there's really much debate that Russell Wilson's the better quarterback right now than Fields.
Can I ask you one more thing before you go?
Yeah, go ahead.
What happens if we go out there Thursday night and we win 13-10 and Wilson looks horrible? What do you do going forward? Because that'll be 3 games in a row where he's below average. What do you think about a change after that, or would you still keep the train rolling?
I mean, they're not at that point. They're 9-2, KP, and Russell Wilson would be 5-0 as a Steelers starter. And I don't think that benching Russell Wilson is the answer in November, when you're 9-2 and he hasn't lost a game yet that he's started. That I don't understand the Russell Wilson hate like that right now. Again, the offense is averaging more points a game than it is when Justin Fields was the quarterback. And Russell Wilson's getting you into the red zone more often. He throws a pretty deep ball. He's getting George Pickens in one-on-one situations more often than Justin Fields did. And the offense looks a little bit more cohesive and with an identity than it did with Justin Fields. And like I said, there is room for Justin Fields in this offense, in the red zone, in situations maybe second and medium where the threat to throw the ball a little bit is still there, the play action's relevant, but you could also tuck it and run with him. But right now, Russell Wilson's the quarterback, and he is the starting quarterback. Did he play well against Baltimore? Not necessarily. But against Washington, I thought he played pretty darn well, with the exception of the interception and 50% passing. 3 touchdowns. It got it done. And he was responsible for the biggest play of the game, the touchdown to Mike Williams, and it was a pretty damn good throw. 6 touchdowns to 2 interceptions so far this year. 3-1 ratio in that regard is still pretty good. And if the Steelers go out on Thursday night and Russ doesn't play well again and they win a close game, I'm not going to be thrilled. That would contradict everything I've said for the last 3 hours, going on 4 hours. But they're not going to bench him. Why would that make sense on November 20th at that, or 21st at that point? When your quarterback is when your starter is undefeated, when he's in 5-0, your team's on a would be 7-game win streak at that point. No, 5-game win streak at that point. At the end of the day, Russell Wilson's your guy until another injury, or if it gets Pickett bad or Trubisky bad, which I don't see that happening. Paul in Pittsburgh just picked up the phone and dialed, and he wants to talk about Justin Fields. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Jack.
What's up?
Different flip of the coin. Why not put Justin Fields as a slot receiver?
Because he's never played wide receiver in his life.
I mean, as a slot receiver.
But he's never played wide receiver in his life, Paul.
Oh, I know, but he's such a great athlete, and he's so fast that who knows what the possibilities could be.
Paul, this isn't Little League football. This isn't high school football. This isn't college football. This is the NFL. And you want to
I get it. I get it. I'm a season ticket holder. I'm just saying it would be a lot of fun to see him on the field, not just in these little special packages down at the goal line. Put him on the field.
Let me ask you a question then, Paul. Let's say they do that on Thursday night, and you're Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, and you've been around the block a time or two. You've been a head coach in the NFL, and you see Justin Fields. You know that he's a quarterback. You know he's never played wide receiver in his life, and he lines up in the slot for you in a play against your defense. Are you going to take him at all seriously if he decides to run a route?
They might actually try to take him out, but if they can't, who knows what the possibilities would be for our offense.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.